One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila, author, psychologist, and speaker, and this is Love University. We're back. As always, we talk about how to love yourself, others, and a higher nature. And starting this week and the week before, we're doing a special guest lecture series where we bring the best experts in the world to talk about psychology, spirituality, relationships, and self-esteem to help you live the fullest life you can possibly live. And today we have a wonderful guest, a very special person is going to be on the show who's going to teach us how to unplug ourselves from the slavery of technology and live with technology in a wonderful way. And this is Nancy Collier. Nancy Collier is an LCSW therapist, interfaith minister, author, speaker, mindfulness teacher. She is the author of the book, The Power of Off, The Mindful Way to Stay Sane in a Virtual World. And she's a national speaker. She's been featured on Good Morning America, New York Times, and many other media, Psychology Today, and Huffington Post. And also, interestingly enough, she's spent 25 years as an equestrian, which I think is a horse person, if I'm not incorrect. Is that true, Nancy?
That is true. An equestrian is a horse person, yes.
Okay, so that means you ride horses, or what do you do with horses?
I show horses. Well, for many, many years, I showed horses. And so you buy them young, and you teach them how to jump. And
oh,
then you.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Now, the power of off, this is, to me, is a very, very interesting topic. And in honor of today, Nancy, I've turned off my phone, I turned off my internet, and it's just me and you right now, face to face. And the question I want to ask you, the idea of technology is, it can help us in many ways, but also it can also challenge us and maybe even bring obstacles. And the question is technology out of control in some ways? And in your book, you talk about younger people send an average of 110 texts per day. 90% of younger people, I guess you say 18 to 30 or 18 to 25, sleep with their phone, and about 50% of people say they would go crazy without their smartphone, and they even bring them to their toilet, to the shower, to weddings and funerals. So what's going on, Nancy? Are we going crazy with technology?
Yes, is the short answer. Okay. Technology is really no different than any other addiction. And we know that through the MRI studies, we know that as we watch people withdraw from technology, we know that because technology is being used to avoid anything we don't want to feel. We're using technology in all the ways we use any other substance. And we're hooked right now. The only real difference in this addiction is that we've all drunk the Kool-Aid. So we're all in. So with other addictions, what works in our favor, if we want someone to get off the addiction, is that sooner or later they're going to lose their work life, their relationship life, something that's important to them. With this addiction, unfortunately, it makes you part of the club rather than an outsider.
Hmm.
So it's a very challenging addiction right now to face. But what we're seeing is that people are describing the same effects as we see in other addictions. They're struggling with loneliness. They're struggling with depression. They're struggling with, at rates that we've never seen before, ever. And suicidality and so on.
That's an amazing thing. You even mentioned things like a person that spends all day on their Facebook and YouTube, and they don't even go outside for a beautiful day, and they don't talk to anyone. They're just immersed in their own inner world of technology. Or you said a woman who almost got run over by a taxi because she was checking her smartphone.
And these are just everyday events. These are the norms. There are far more out there. I had a client recently who felt so virtual, had been living in the virtual world for so long that she convinced a doctor to take x-rays of herself to prove she had bones, that
wow.
She was real.
Okay. That's amazing. That's almost like a paranoid delusion or something.
Yeah. Well, and from a very normal, non-psychopathic person. So we're seeing it show up in many, many ways. And one of the things that interests me very much is that people are describing not just feverish anxiety, but a lack of meaning in their lives. It's like we've disconnected from the things that really, truly nourish us as human beings.
Right.
We're chasing we're chasing entertainment. We're chasing anything that's fast or immediate or easy or pleasure. But we're not enough right now. We're in a phase where we're not enough giving ourselves the real stuff that feeds our spirit.
Yes, definitely. Now, I'm really on the same page with you. I'm a person that really doesn't like to use cell phones a lot, and even though I have to for business. And I remember when I was a kid, I was an only child and kind of introverted, but I used to love to read. I would read like 10 books a week. And one day, my parents were worried. They said, where's Alex? Where's Alex? And I was sitting in a corner of the house, contentedly reading a book. And I really like that, you know, having that quiet space. And we don't have that today because we're all, you know, constantly looking at email and text and things. But I do want to talk about one thing, though, or ask you, Nancy, before we get into, you know, your book is really fascinating. You really cover a lot of fascinating points about what you call, I guess, a technoholic. Is that the term? Yep. People that are wrapped up in technology too much?
Yep.
So the point is, I mean, let's look at the other side of things, because I know we have even millennials and other generations listen to this and say, wait a minute, you guys are kind of fuddy-duddies, and don't you understand that the amazing power of technology, that we can get a job, we can get dates, we can find a soulmate, we can research our family that's lost, we can see movies, you know, on our phone, we can, I mean, there's an amazing number of things we can do now. How do you answer those people that say that?
Well, Of course. And what makes technology so challenging is, like anything that is simultaneously spectacular,
yes,
and also very, very dangerous. Ah. So this book is not about becoming a Luddite. It is not. I love technology.
Okay.
Listen, one of the reasons that I wrote the book is I was addicted.
Yes.
I was a total email and text addict. And
yes,
I had to stop and say, okay, I have to find a way find freedom in technology, not from
it. I like that.
So, we're, you know, even the caves have Wi-Fi now. There's nowhere to go.
Yes.
There's no escape from this. And the truth is, we don't want to escape.
Ah.
Right? I couldn't live my life without a GPS. I was born without a sense of direction. I love technology,
okay,
right?
So Nancy, let me ask you, are you a Netflix binger? Are you one of those people watches? You
I'm
do that?
Not.
Okay.
I mean, I have children, so
okay.
You know, another reason that I wrote this book is because I was trying to navigate how do you raise healthy kids with self-esteem.
Yes.
Because so much of their life is going on in social media where, as we know, you know, everyone is presenting a kind of false persona, this online identity, this Instagram life where even your neighbor is photoshopped, you know, and the kids are comparing themselves to images that don't really exist or lives that don't really exist. So they're all struggling with self-esteem because they imagine a life that is not based in reality.
That's interesting. Now I like the phrase that you said, something like, is not to live without technology, but to live with it successfully? Or what was the phrase
freedom,
that you said?
Freedom in technology, not from it.
Ah, freedom in technology. So freedom is a very fascinating word also, very a beautiful word. To be free means to, I guess, act from your natural authenticity, who you really are, and you know, be your best self. Because you do talk about the idea of compulsion, and you said that people have lack of control with their relationship with technology. Tell us about the compulsion part of this.
Well, I would say that we all have a kind of inner reptile. We have this less evolved aspect of ourselves. And I don't know if you've ever been on an all-inclusive vacation, but it's that part of us that, you know, will get up to the bar around whatever your vice is around 9:30 a.m. and start with a mudslide because you can. You know, because you can, even if you don't want it, right? It's the it's the cruise ship buffet. You just keep going back. And what technology offers, because when we go on technology, we get a hit of that juicy dopamine. You know, we just love dopamine. So I would say that there's an inner reptile that goes for pleasure and goes for whatever's easiest and whatever takes the least effort. And then we have this, and that is a sort of compulsive drive. You know, we don't want to feel anxiety, so we reach for our phone. It's all driven by our less evolved aspects. And then we have a part of ourselves that's more evolved, that has wisdom and knows in the long run what's good for us or what makes us feel like the day was meaningful and those sorts of things. And we are in a kind of profound struggle right now between which aspect of us is going to lead the way into our future. And we got out of the gate kind of unsteadily, I would say, or rashly with technology. And this first 20 years has been all about the reptile, you know, more, 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 what's next? What's and there's a real stopping right now where even corporate entities are saying, wait a minute, we've created all of this. And maybe we need to be part of the solution because it may not be heading us in the best direction.
So that's when you say reptile, you're talking about like an unconscious or primitive impulse,
that's
something
right.
that
right.
kind of you're not really in control of. Where,
yes.
You know, food, sex, pleasure in some ways are natural responses. So,
right.
You know, the pleasure thing. The other thing is, when we talk about compulsion or addiction, we often say, the question is, does it affect you? Does it affect your performance? Does it affect, you know, like, say, your relationships, job, or health? As a fine line, because, like you said, it could be a very helpful technology and even enhance your life. But at what point does it become destructive? Because you mentioned the word destructive.
Well,
where do you see that line being drawn? Because that's kind of a
I see all day long in my practice. You know, I work with couples and individuals, and I see boots on the ground, how this is destroying people's ability to be with each other, to feel connected. It's funny, you know, when you interview people, they, and you ask them, you know, what brings meaning into your life, almost always people start with the word connection, with the feeling of being really truly present with another human being or themselves or the moment. And I am interviewing people all the time about how technology is impacting their ability to be truly connected to other human beings, to be able to tolerate their own company, to be able to be in the experience they're having. You know, not using the experience to promote their online persona. Oh, look at me, you know, I'm at a museum. Aren't I a cultural person? But guess what? We're not at the museum anymore. Or when they're with their partner and they're answering 50 texts while they're having dinner with their partner or their kids or whatever it might be, it is severely impacting our ability to be present, to be connected, to find some sort of calm in the chaos. People talk to me all day long about wanting to find some quiet, some peace, some sense of center in the middle of this tsunami that is information and 2,000 emails a day and so on. So real life, it's impacting the quality of life.
Yes, Nancy. And I think one term you use is escaping the moment.
Yeah.
And you say that people that have unhappy feelings, in the old days they might eat ice cream or something, but you know they know that's going to make them fat or overweight. But nowadays, yeah. People try to escape their loneliness or their boredom many times with, you know, being on the internet or YouTube or texting or whatever it is. And that's kind of an escape. And the other thing is that people are also very impatient. You may have noticed this, like if you don't respond to someone quickly, they're going to be upset. Like, you know, you don't care about me. What's going on? And relationships have even ended because people don't respond as quickly as people want. What do you think is happening with that? The impatience and that kind of mindset?
Well, there's a new sort of, what would we call it? Maybe value in some sense, that everything has to be fast.
Yes.
You know, we value speed. And
right.
Very often, you know, I talk to a lot of people who work in business, and they will tell me that I am asked to make a very important decision that requires processing, that requires
yes.
time.
Right.
And there's this expectation that everything should happen fast.
Right.
And we are losing the great reverence for time. Not just time, but hard work and the value of process. Let me take a walk with this question. Let me mull it over. Let me talk to people about it. Let me do that very old-fashioned thing called thinking. Let me think about it. And now what's valued, as you say, is immediacy. And immediacy and speed are seen as, you know, if a relationship is important to you, then that naturally means that I will answer you immediately, which also assumes that I'm always available to everyone and everything else going on in the universe, which means that I'm not available to myself in this moment.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the idea of, you know, people that want an immediate response. And, you know, I wrote a book, Love Types. It talks about the personality types, you know, the Myers-Briggs. And we know that introverts make up at least 45 to 50% of the population. And introverts like to think things over. So for them, it can be a challenge, you know, to respond so quickly because they want to process it internally. And that can be an issue. And I'm actually working on a new book called The Invincible You, using East and West psychology and philosophy, kind of what you do with your mindfulness. And one of the things I talk about is to develop patience as a form of compassion, because when you're patient, you have more time for other people and you have more time for yourself and you can nurture yourself. So an exercise I tell people is take the longer line in a store. In other words, it could be a line with a lot of people. You choose that intentionally to increase your patience muscles, you know, to become more patient. And part of your mind says, no, I don't want to be in this line. But you can say, well, I'm going to observe people. I'm going to observe myself. And maybe I'll even talk to someone and make a friend or a contact. And that's hard for people today in our society, right? To intentionally choose a longer line, because everybody wants everything quick.
Yeah, beautiful exercise. And what you're also, it seems, suggesting there is that they make themselves a destination. So that the idea of being with ourself, imagine, you know, not frantically checking email while we're on the line, but to start to be curious about your own experience, your own whatever's happening for you in that line, that could be a place of interest, right?
Definitely.
That is so foreign in this moment where what we value, you know, is productivity. So, I'm in a line. I have to listen to a podcast. I have to learn something.
Well, except for Love University, then we're okay.
So. Exactly. But if we could start to remember that silence, you know, be still and know that I am God, whatever is your belief system, that silence itself has a value. That stillness itself is healing for the nervous system.
Exactly.
And that our own consciousness could be a place that we were curious about. Then we're not frantically looking for an external filling for our emptiness, which is a recipe for chronic anxiety.
Yeah, Nancy, I think that was a beautiful phrase you came up with a little bit ago. You said, make yourself a destination. Did you just make that up, or is that something that you've said before?
I've spoken about that. Extensively about what does it mean to be a destination in your own consciousness.
That's beautiful.
And once we really are a destination, then that underlying existential anxiety that is terrified of bumping into ourselves all the time and keeps running from thing to thing to thing, which the internet is more than delighted to offer us the next thing to run to. But once we don't need a something to feel okay, and we know that our own presence, our own company is something that we can tolerate, something fundamental in us relaxes.
That's interesting. Now, again, people listening to the show, we have all age ranges from new generation to older people. And we're not really saying that technology is bad or that is negative, but we're seeing it as kind of a tool that you can use for many different purposes, for both healing and maybe even for negative purpose. But there's a research that does show, and this is something interesting, that savoring the moment occurs when you share your experiences with others. So I used to think, when people take pictures of like sushi at restaurants, I thought that was silly. But research shows actually that can be a positive thing, because it shows that you're sharing your joy with your friends, and you actually feel better as a result. It's called savoring.
Right.
How do you react to that? So that kind of goes a little bit against the idea that it's a negative thing.
I disagree with that, actually. I think that that's not savoring.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's an incorrect use of savoring, that what's happening when someone is chronically, and I use chronically a lot because it's sort of ongoing, but when a person is all the time taking photographs of their life, a couple things are happening. One is that they're so busy trying to get the camera in the right position and get the whole thing together that they're actually missing the direct experience of the moment they're photographing. And the feeling the person often has is like showing they have a life. Look, I have a life. Look, all these things that I did. But they don't contain in their own bodies the cellularly lived experience. They don't feel at a very deep level. They have, 64 gigabytes in their iPhoto file, but they don't feel somehow that they're living their life. They keep asking, well, when is my life kind of going to start? The real one, not where I have photos of it.
Right. But think about Nancy, if you have an anniversary dinner and you're enjoying it and you say, call your friend, hey, look, I'm really having a great time. Take a look at this. or I just got a raise and a promotion. And isn't that a nice thing to do, to share it with your friends? And, you know, you feel connected with them. You know, they appreciate your success.
Alex, the thing is I really, you know, I've been talking on the road about this book for a year now. And one thing I will say 100% is that we hate gray in this society. We hate and. So people always come to me and they say, well, what do you mean? So you're not supposed to, you know, photograph your child's graduation from college. None of this is black and white. None of this is black and white. What I speak to in the book is to be mindful. How do you, of course that's one, there's a wonderful place for it. But it's about spiritual autonomy to some degree, where we say, you know, am I hiding inside my camera from my life? Am I showing up for my life? Where is it appropriate? There's sometimes it's appropriate, and there's sometimes, and people will always want a list for me. Do I use it here? Do I use it there? Do I use it at, is soccer game okay? Right. And it's bigger than that. It's saying to really do an inventory of your life and contemplate for yourself. It's very personal. You know, every time I use, I ask myself, well, what would I have to feel if I didn't use in this moment? So I may still use, but it's still a question of I choose to use. So I'm not just coming from an impulsive kind of, have to get this on camera, but I'm making a choice. I really want to have this.
Right. Well, that's, I think, what you're talking about, and you mentioned it in your practice with Eastern philosophy, is having the middle path, kind of the path of balance. So neither extreme may be healthy. And the idea of having a calm mind, I think equanimity is the term that people use for that.
Exactly.
And for example, let's say I'm going to give you two terms. You tell me what you think about it. So these are two extremes. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. On one side, we have information overload, which you talk about, that there's so much information out there, and there's news and entertainment and politics and sports, and there's too much going on, which is probably maybe a negative thing for people. But on the other hand, there's a need to know, like curiosity. You know, what if we want to learn more? Like, for example, I Google a word and I see another word and I want to Google that and learn more about it. So how do you see that dichotomy there, the need to know and information overload?
Right. So, again, we're looking at what is balance? Where is equanimity here? So if, for example, a friend of mine who, when anything comes up that he can't remember, he's immediately Googling, you know, what was the actor's name in that? He's immediately on it.
And
and it's fun, and we all, you know, we all delight in stuff like that.
Yes.
But I would say, that we want to remember that there is a value in letting your mind find that information, so that if tomorrow I wake up, I go, oh my God, it was that guy. That's his name, right? There is a great pleasure in your mind's ability to go through all the file drawers and find that name, right?
Yes.
So I want, when I'm choosing all the time, sort of obsessively to, you know, research, oh, I could get that information, to be aware, am I doing that to avoid something? Am I doing that because I can't tolerate the experience of not knowing? Mm-hmm. Am I, you know, I was on vacation a couple weeks ago, and I was riding in a vehicle over sand dunes, and the guy that was with me in the car spent the whole time researching, you know, the area and giving us facts on the area.
Yes.
And I don't think he ever looked out the window. So say your need to know is also a way of avoiding the direct experience you're having. So what I'm trying to get the message out there is that sometimes taking that walk to the subway without learning something, without productivity or learning as my goal, and just wandering like a happy dog, without a destination or without something coming out of that experience, right? Because essentially what's happening at a deeper level is that we have a direct experience of life that happens through the senses. And we also have an experience of life that happens through the mind, which is all the information and what we're learning and what we know and so on. And as technology amps up the mind and gives more food for the mind, what it's doing is solidifying the mind's place as the only host of our life, if you will. We only experience life through the who, what, where, when, and why of the mind. And we're losing the connection with the body's lived experience of life or the heart's experience of life as the mind kind of kidnaps every experience.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Living in the head, living in your head all the time and not living from the outside world.
Yes.
Now, I'll give you another one now, Nancy. Relationship interruption versus relationship building. So relationship interruption, I think you said something like you came home from work one day and you nodded to your children and then you went straight to your email, something like that. Or people that are out with people or even on a date or something and everyone's checking their texts and they're not interacting. On the other hand, though, relationship building is that, you know, nowadays we can find love online. We can find perhaps even our soulmate. We can find lost family members. We can find adoptive or birth parents. We can talk to people across the world that we never would have met through video chat. So how do you see the fine line in there, relationship building versus relationship interruption?
Both. You know, what you're doing very, very mindfully, right, is pointing out this vast bothness that technology is, the contradiction of those two, and everything resolves in contradiction, right? So again, the answer, which is a very sort of unsexy answer, is that we have to be conscious. We have to be aware of how are we using. So if someone is finding their soulmate through Tinder, let's say, and then when they get to that coffee with that person, that they're putting their phone away and actually being present with that person. Or if we are away for 2 weeks from our kids and we're FaceTiming, how wonderful, right? But that we also are conscious that when we're in the room with them, that we are mindful of giving them our full attention. So it's how we are using it to connect ourselves. What I've seen very much is that our communications are beginning to look a bit more like tweets, so that we communicate in very sort of shallow, superficial, you know, top layer. And then when things get tricky or there are bumps, people are out. They ghost. You know, they're gone, right? It's not easy. Relationship.
Yeah, I think the term ghosting, isn't that when people disappear or something like that?
Yes, with no word, right? There's this expectation, like with everything else that we talked about, you know, that things should be easy. Is this? It's being applied to relationships. And God knows, if you get to a certain age, you know that nothing about easy applies to relationships. So if we bring that same value system of I want it to be fun and easy and immediate and kind of, you know, entertaining, if you will, if that is what drives us in intimate relationship, then we're not going to do too well. We're not going to go very far.
Interesting. Now, you also mentioned this is a very interesting term. You call it hyper availability. It's like being too available. And I remember when I grew up, you know, there was no internet, there's no phone. You know, I kind of like that. I didn't have to constantly answer texts and phone calls like I do today or emails. And you talk about the idea that people either feel guilty that they're not more available to others, you know, quickly or available, or that people have their importance judged on their availability. Like if I'm available, I'm important, or if I'm not, I'm not. So how do we deal with that part of it, this hyper-availability?
One of the things that I counsel people that come to me with is arrange with your friends. Let them know that I don't always pick up texts all the time, because it's expectation that when you text, I'm available, I'm getting it, and I'm available to return it. And if I don't, there's something dreadfully wrong in our relationship, or I'm angry, or what have you. So one of the things that we can do is to just set up a text policy with people in your life. So at 5 o'clock, you know, I'll get back to you during the day, but I'm not available to text.
Is there a way to do that automated-wise, to put in your phone that the text says, I will answer within 24 hours? Is that possible?
It generally, I don't know of an auto response yet in the text world, but I believe that, I think someone told me that they are developing that.
All right, so there's, as far as we know, there is no automated thing, no, for that. There's for email, though, I think. You can do that.
But automated thing could be your mouthpiece sharing with your friends, perhaps in a universal email, letting you know. Because it's really curious, because it's funny, we're available to everyone else on the planet, but we're not available to ourselves. We're not available.
Exactly. We feel guilty taking time away. You said we're emotional robots answering every single text or call immediately.
Yes. And I can tell you with my friends and with my, certainly with my teenager, this last week we were out of town for the holiday, and the taking away her device is like taking away crack from an addict. But then within 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours, she is a different person, and she's so grateful that she's not available to her friends or the social world, that she doesn't have to check, that she doesn't have to stay, because the pressure, particularly on young people, to stay in the loop, in this every group chat, everything, which is terror that if you miss a moment, you'll be out. So that kind of having to, we're living in a state of fight or flight all the time, available, available, available. Yeah. This is a state that in other times in our history was only true that when perhaps someone was on the verge of dying.
Right, of course.
You know, the phone was old. But but I counsel people to take breaks in their day and certainly not start their day.
Right. So Nancy, if I take away your cell phone for a day, are you going to be cool with that? Or are you going
to... Oh, I'd be excited. I'd be delighted.
Are you serious? Because most people, if they lose their phone, they have a panic attack, you know, or if they don't have it, you know.
That's right. The first, you know, I had my whole system go down, and it was an hour or two of sort of panic, and then I settled into, I know how to be. I know how to be here. Right. This is enough. This moment is enough. I don't need 500 other distractions, right? Right. I actually, within by noon, when the tech guy was saying, you know, you're going to be up and running, I was sort of wishing he would say, you know, you have another day.
Okay, that's interesting. So going back to the old school.
Yeah.
Nancy, one thing that this is I really identify with, and this is a really great term, you talk about the lottery mentality for email checkers, people that overcheck constantly. Right. And it's kind of humorous. You say, well, you're hoping that your old sweetheart will call you, or that you're going to win the lottery or something, or your family member will apologize, which probably has a very low chance of happening, I would think.
Very low. I mean, if you look at what's funny is if you look at the ratio of what we get that really matters to us versus the junk that we get.
Right.
And yet we keep having this way in the background feeling like somewhere in there will be that magic email.
Exactly.
You know?
Like your book just hit the bestseller list, Nancy. Isn't that wonderful? The Power of Off is with Oprah now. So,
Exactly.
So how do we get rid of that lottery mentality? Because we do have that. You know, we always think, oh, there's something important out there, something great that we're going to get.
What I try and point people to, and myself included, of course, is when I'm checking, I just ask that I'm conscious, that I become more aware of why am I really checking. And usually I'm checking not because I'm expecting something from the president, but I'm not wanting to be with what's here in my present moment. Sometimes, of course, I'm checking because I'm expecting something. Yeah. Of course. But often I'm checking because maybe I'm a little bored, or maybe I'm feeling uncomfortable. Maybe I don't know what to do, or maybe I don't feel like being with myself, or a feeling I've had or something. And so I just ask that I and those that come to me take the pause and be curious about what am I really checking about now? Mm. And listen, maybe it is because I want that old boyfriend to apologize and say we're on. I don't know. Whatever it is that somebody wants. But to be more conscious, because when we're conscious, we feel in control of our lives. When we're just reacting, this sort of impulsive reptilian drive, we don't feel very good about ourselves. We don't feel that we are in charge of our lives.
Right. Well, but Nancy, the idea that sometimes we need to take a little distraction, a little coffee, a little tea, maybe a little internet. Yeah. You know, we're working hard and we need a change of pace. Do you see a value in that? Using it as a kind of a change up?
Absolutely. And I'm all for caffeine. I'm, you know, and I'm all for using the internet wisely with a sense of self-compassion that, hey, listen, sometimes I need to binge on Netflix, or sometimes I need to just research shoes and just, I want a break from presence.
Right. So if you do it consciously, you're saying that's okay because you're consciously doing it.
Absolutely. And give yourself a break that, you know, I love researching vacations, right? It's super fun, and half the time I'm not going to do anything with it. But the pleasure is allowed, but conscious. That's all I'm asking people is to wait.
Now, Nancy, we're talking, and this has really been a great show because we're getting into a lot of great content and stuff people can really identify with. And some of us are laughing about it because, you know, we do all these things. But let's talk a little bit now about solutions. What do we do now? So we do live in this world. It's not going to change. In fact, it'll probably be more technological. So how do we live a healthy and free life amidst all this technology? What are some steps we can take or any techniques or exercises?
Well, if someone wants to buy the book, there is there's a 30-day detox. And in every chapter, in relation with whatever subject we're talking about, there are mindful solutions to how we would work with it. So the very first thing, though, is to take ownership of your life, which means to say, how is this working for me? And that's a very, again, a very personal thing, which is, where are my problems with technology? Where am I using technology as a substance to keep me away from the present moment or myself? That I get very real about, you know, am I feeling nourished in my life? Is this at the end of my life? It, you know, will having the top score in Candy Crush, will that feel like a good, you know, at the end of this life? So what are the elements in my life that make for a nourishing life? Not what's the meaning of life, but what creates a life that feels meaningful? And that I start to look at my relationship with technology in that light. And where am I using it in a way that really takes away from a deeper sense of well-being?
And then you talk about your needs. You talk about awareness, emotional connection, meaning, control, and authenticity. Which of those is the most important to start out with to develop?
The very first one would be awareness. To start to bring attention to how am I using this wonderful tool? Is it using me or am I using it? And where are the places that I can bring more awareness to it so as to improve the quality of my life? Awareness is the beginning of connection. It's the beginning of nourishment. It's the beginning of meaning. It's without awareness, we are stuck.
Okay. So how do we develop that awareness? Do we keep an awareness journal of when we're tempted to use the internet? Do we meditate? You know, what is the way to develop that awareness of our technology use?
Yeah, meditation is a really great place to start. Just 10 minutes a day, 5 minutes a day of watching your own mind, beginning to hear your own thoughts, starting to sit quietly for 5 minutes a day and be aware of, wow, what's arising inside of me? What feelings, what sensations, and so on. The other thing is when we're in any situation, we're asking ourselves, you know, am I here? Am I really in this moment? Am I paying attention to what's happening? Or am I just distracting myself and bouncing from thing to thing?
That's a good point. So see your hand as it picks up a cup, or see yourself walking under a door and actually see it, actually be aware of it.
Exactly. Tune into our body's experience. We do it every, you know, once a day. We do a sense loop. What am I seeing? What am I hearing? You go through the five senses and just tune into those for 1 minute.
Right. What about people that say that we live in a so-called ADHD society? A lot of people even classify themselves as attention deficit, like they have to be doing many different things and I can't sit still. And, you know, even sitting there for 5 minutes, my mind is going crazy. I got to get on YouTube or something.
Yeah.
How do you talk to those people that say this is impossible?
Well, everything starts with a baby step. Everything starts, so it's okay if it feels impossible. When you're in that state, the important thing is you're doing it, and it won't always feel impossible. And in those, you know, with those sorts of people, sometimes it's helpful to do it in a group, to find a group to sit with, to hear some teachings, which by the grace of technology, we can go online and find all, or an app like Calm, or an app where you just learn with a group to follow your breath. Your breath for a minute. Okay.
So now, Nancy, you're on the technology side now. You just switched over.
That's what's so fun. For some people, the only way they'll do it, they won't go to a brick and mortar meditation center, but they'll sign up for Breathe, the app, or what have you.
Okay.
So use it. There's nothing wrong with that. But to at some point, to for yourself, say, I want to find freedom in technology, not from it. I want more control in my life.
I like that. That's beautiful. Now, you know, Nancy, there's a phrase called the Shabbat or Sabbath, which in the Old Testament is the day of rest. For some, it's Friday or some, it's Sunday. But basically, you know, people don't work on that day and they kind of meditate and spend time with family. I think you talk about taking a many technology fasts, like 15 minutes a day. Or I even mentioned like four hours a day. What do you think is a good length of time to take a little fast from technology?
Well, when people are in my program, I ask them if they would take a full day every other week.
I talk about that, but people hate that. They really get crazy when they talk about
that. But during the week, while someone is just coming along and starting this, I ask that they see if they can get a four-hour break into the day. So, and very important that the first half hour of the day and the last hour of the day, they're tech-free. I ask people to take technology out of their bedrooms, out of the dinner area, the meal area. I ask people very specific things where they're just doing little mini detoxes. And if they can start out with just an hour a day of not checking, I ask people to plan times in their day where they check as opposed to grazing. Not every 30 seconds or every 5 minutes, or that you get to check at 11 in the morning, you get to check at 3, you get to check at 7. Those sorts of things. So, you know, it reduces the anxiety. I could be checking. You've set up a system.
But actually, now, how about telling people or suggesting, what do you do in your free time now that you have all this time? Should I make love with my spouse, play with my children, or my dog? What do we do to fill up all this spare time that we have now?
I can leave that, I think, to people to discover their own curiosity. Mm-hmm. That's life reemerges when we stop wasting it so readily. You know, our existence, the profundity of our existence returns.
So there are many activities. I mean, people will say, now I have so much free time. Maybe I'll write a novel, or maybe I'll paint something, or take a trip now that I don't have to be on the internet all the time.
That's right. Yeah. It's remarkable the stories I've heard about what becomes possible and how much time there is in a day and the beauty of life.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, Nancy, it's been a wonderful pleasure to have you on board. Believe it or not, the time has gone by so fast. This is one of our longest shows, and it seems like it was very quick because of, I think we really had a good enjoyment.
Terrific and, to
yeah.
hear that.
And also, I want to take up this idea of challenging our listeners to do a technology fast this week in honor of today's show. How many hours should we tell them to do it? What do you think is a good time?
I think 4 hours is great. If they can get 4 hours, give themselves an hour to be on, and then see, this would be really big, but to do another four.
So that means turn off your cell phone, no internet.
Every,
now, what if people say, but wait a minute, what if there's an emergency? My kid is in an accident. My husband is dying on the street. How do I deal with that?
You obviously go and find it. And have an emergency system so the person can reach you by telephone.
Okay. So like a backup phone or something?
Yep. You set that up before you enter in. So all of those things are taken care of. If it's your kids, they have a person that they can call in case of an emergency. And again, probability in that four-hour stretch that something that almost never happens is going to happen is extraordinarily.
Right. Exactly. But people worry about that. You know, it's like the lottery mentality in reverse, the lottery catastrophe. Like, you know, there's going to be an earthquake and I'll be swallowed up or something.
And they will, and you set that up so that your mind can be calm about that.
I see. Perfect. Well, Nancy, where can we, listeners get a hold of you and websites and books and things that you have so they can learn more about you?
So www.nancycollier.com, and it's one L. Everybody gets confused, but that is a great place to see all my work and everything and reach me through that. And this book, The Power of Off, is out now, and also my book before that, which is called Inviting a Monkey to Tea.
is that like the monkey mind that is chattering all the time? Is that the one we're talking about?
Okay. That's exactly what it is. Yes. Beautiful. Which technology kicks into full gear. So all those things are, all of those are ways to reach me.
Excellent. And you're a therapist, so you do, work with people individually?
I work individually and with couples in psychotherapy. And I also do spiritual consulting.
Oh, beautiful.
And particularly about this idea of creating a meaningful life.
Do you ever get out? I'm in L.A. I think you're in New York. Do you ever get out here? Maybe we can collaborate or something in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to. We do all the time, actually. actually.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, Nancy, it's been a pleasure. And again, anyone here on Love University, if you want to talk about today's show, ask us any questions, or even be a guest on the show, you can reach us at lovetype4u@aol.com. That's LOVETYPE. The number 4, letter U, at AOL.com. Our website, loveuniversity.love, and 310-226-8090. So Nancy, it's been a wonderful pleasure. So let's turn off everything. We're going to turn off the stuff we're doing right now, okay, for a little bit. And yes. But it's a miracle. We can talk to you right now through this vehicle we're using here, the technology, right?
That's the good part.
And then, everyone here, Love University, put away your iPads, your notepads, and if you're old-fashioned, put away your pens and pencils. The university session is not closed for today. Our guest lecturer, Nancy Collier, has been a pleasure. Until next time, this is Dr. Alex Avila.